A Pattern So Vast by Kate Tucker, Associate Minister, First Universalist Church of Minneapolis.
I still use the copy of The Joy of Cooking I got for Christmas in 1969. This now fragile cookbook has memories stained into many of its pages, especially the peanut butter cookie page. I've always loved how the fish chapter ends. The authors give many dozens of fish recipes arranged alphabetically by fish, from fried catfish, scalloped cod and marinated herring, through casseroled octopus, glazed salmon, broiled swordfish, and so on. Then the final fish recipe on page 362 just says, whale, last but vast. As I thought toward this month's theme, forgiveness, that phrase kept coming to mind, last but vast. Forgiveness is a whale of a topic for exploration. Vast, certainly, and last in a way, in that it's a lifetime's work, forgiving and being forgiven. Forgiveness is a big part of getting our house in order when we come to die. The hospice booklets tell us that 2 out of 4 of the things we need to say to each other pertain to forgiveness. The final 4, thank you, I love you, forgive me, I forgive you. Last but vast. We know that in this world the pattern of revenge and hatred is vast and ancient, fed every day by new bloodshed and breakage. We know about the vast pattern of hurt and warfare. That's why it's so amazing when we hear about those who break the sequence, who do something surprising. If you'd like to read stories about surprising patterns of forgiveness, I recommend a website called The Forgiveness Project. The Forgiveness Project. It's an international nonprofit dedicated to healing the wounds of the past. The Forgiveness Project collects people's stories. You see a page of tiny headshots of individuals from all over the world, and you click on a photo, and the full story appears. There's Bud Welch, whose daughter, Julie Marie, was killed in the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995. In the months after her death, Bud changed from supporting the death penalty for Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols to taking a public stand against it. And there's Andrew Rice, whose older brother David was killed on September 11th, 2001, when the World Trade Center collapsed. Andrew is a member of Peaceful Tomorrows, a group founded by family members of September 11th victims seeking effective, nonviolent responses to terrorism. There are stories of people from Northern Ireland, Rwanda, the U.S., England, South Africa, Israel, Ukraine, people who are part of a vast pattern of forgiveness. In the archives of the Forgiveness Project, there's the story of a woman who was brutally assaulted when she was out running. She then picked a man out of the lineup, and he went to prison for 18 years. And then, after 18 years, DNA testing showed that she picked the wrong man. This woman had spent a couple of decades trying to forgive the man, and now she'd spend her future trying to forgive herself. Self-forgiveness, she says, is by far more difficult. Forgiving ourselves, it's a big one, perhaps even more vast than forgiving others. Occasionally, when I'm here at church, I need to remember to do something. So I call myself at home and leave a message. It's quick and easy. I call my home number, I hear my phone ring, I hear myself answer, and I invite me to leave a message. So I do. I say, hey, it's me, it's you. Would you look for the book of wedding readings and bring it for Sharon? Thanks, see you. The first time I did this, called myself and heard myself answer, I had a strange couple of seconds where I wondered, this person I'm talking to, will she be glad to hear from me? Will she get back to me? Is she kind? Has she forgiven me for some dumb things I've done? Do we have unfinished business? And I had this teeny urge to say, to stay on the line and check out a couple things. Say, hey, that weird time back in, what, 1991, and that thing that happened around the time Dad died, is that all okay now? Are we square? Do we need to talk? When you search online for how to apologize, you get a drop-down list. How to apologize. Here's the list. To a girl, to a friend, to a girlfriend, effectively, for cheating, to a guy, to your mom, to someone, to a woman. Nothing on the list about apologizing to yourself. But it's interesting to imagine how some sound guidance on apologies might apply to forgiving yourself. Rochelle Melander of the Alban Institute has some good thoughts in her article, Learning to Apologize. She suggests a four-part process. Four parts. The first step is to listen and learn how we've hurt the other person. It's usually not comfortable. We want to say, no, you're wrong. I'm not that bad. Instead, the idea is to be still and listen and then ask, is there more? And when we've heard the whole story, we check to see that we've heard well. Is this what you are saying? We ask, repeating the story until we get it right. The second step is to say, I'm sorry, period. We do not qualify our apology by saying, I'm sorry if you took offense at what I said, or I'm sorry if you felt that way, or if you heard me say that. That's like saying, I'm sorry you are hypersensitive. I'm sorry you are mixed up. I'm sorry you don't hear well. The best apology is just, I'm sorry. The third step is to make it right. Both parties talk about what can be done to bring healing. They ask, what are our needs here? What do we do or say differently from now on? They look each other in the eye and agree on a plan. And the fourth step is to ask for forgiveness. Receiving forgiveness officially is essential. It isn't helpful when the offended person brushes off our apology with no big deal or what's done is done. Melander says it's hard to be content with no big deal responses when we suspect that it was a big deal. These responses don't have the healing power of, I forgive you. To say, I forgive you is to say, we are letting go of any claim for punishment or payment. We're ending our hold on the other person. We are setting them free. If the wronged person does not offer forgiveness, Melander says, simply ask, do you forgive me? So four steps. Hear the hurt. Say I'm sorry. Make it right. Ask forgiveness. And then, I'm thinking, we might be wise to go through the whole thing, all four steps again with ourselves. I know and admire a woman whose life journey, she's now in her mid-40s, has included living with the fact that when she was a young adult, she was the driver during a car accident that killed her father, was in the passenger seat next to her. For a time, she considered suicide, but instead, she chose meditation, and since then, her life has been about healing and becoming a healer. She can see farther than a lot of us. People can bring her anything. She is unflappable. She has the most hospitable heart. I haven't known regret like hers. I do remember, though, a particular time when I narrowly escaped a bad crash. It was my fault. In a confused moment, I turned left against the light. The oncoming car screamed to a stop and saved us both. I was so rattled, I immediately pulled over into the closest parking area just to get my breath and fall apart a little. When the other car followed and pulled up beside me, I braced myself. The guy who got out of the old Chevy was 20-something with tattoos, and he was going to let me have it, and I was ready. I had been stupid. But what this young man did was come over to me with a face full of concern as he asked politely, "Are you okay?" He asked me, the negligent one, if I was okay after I'd nearly killed him. I felt something release way down in my chest. It was beyond personal. He not only gave me back my dignity, he redeemed the whole human race. One thing I understood right then was that the hardest thing ultimately is to be the perpetrator. And I got a better understanding of something else too, something Jesus reportedly said to his disciples when they complained about the sudden generosity of a former sinner. Jesus said essentially, "One who has been forgiven much loves much." The disciples didn't quite get it, but I do. When I think about the woman who was driving when her father died in that accident, I have a wish or a hunch, or a prayer that her father has visited her somehow, maybe often, maybe in dreams. He's come to her whole and with the tenderest concern, the tenderest expression. He's asked, "Are you okay?" Because they both know that she's the one who needs the reassurance. She's the one who needs to be set free. No matter how careful we humans are, we can never be careful enough to avoid hurting and being hurt. That's the human condition, and that's why we need forgiveness. Not long ago, Buddhist nun Pema Chodron asked her Buddhist teacher what advice he had for Western Buddhist practitioners. He replied that what we in the West need to understand is guiltlessness. He said, "You have to understand that even though you make a lot of mistakes and you mess up in all kinds of ways, all of that is impermanent and shifting and changing and temporary. But fundamentally, your mind and heart are not guilty. They are innocent." He continued, "Most of our striking out at other people in this culture comes from feeling bad about ourselves." He said that when you get upset or hooked by something, in the first 4 seconds, it feels like bad me. And after a few seconds, it has shifted and it feels like bad them. Our response is to blame. And the root of blaming is a deep discomfort about ourselves. He suggests that when you get hooked by something, pause. Breathe. Let it be. Don't strike out at yourself or anyone else. Breathe. Relax. Let all the feelings pass through you. Let the whole thing, as he says, unwind and unravel. Feel how it feels to hang out in ineffable space. The universe forgives. As theologian Matthew Fox reminds us, the earth moves on. Wild daisies bloom again on the battlefield. Our universalist message of hope says that love has the final word, and love's work is to heal and forgive. It says that vaster than our wrongs is the vastness of the mystery. Vaster than our misdeeds and hurts is the vastness of our kinship. It says the last vast thing is love. So be it, and amen.